everyone. Welcome to the Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavioral Therapy class series. A trained therapist and secular member of Overeaters Anonymous will teach us new DBT skills every week that can help manage emotions, which can often trigger overeating. To find out more about secular overeaters, visit the website, secularovereaters.org. Now let's begin today's class.
So welcome to the Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills class. My name is Susan P., and I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict. I've been a CBT therapist for over 36 years, and I got my intensive training in DBT over 10 years ago. I use DBT skills every day, and I'm excited to teach other OA fellows what has been so helpful to me and my clients. This meeting is an ongoing class where we'll focus on a different skill every week. And if you're listening to this as a recording, if it's not today, but another day, you can check the podcast show notes for links to the materials I'll be reviewing. Okay, so we're going to begin each class with a mindfulness exercise aimed at helping you get out of your head. This one is aimed at helping you get out of your head, but actually we're going to stay right in your head. And the real reason for this exercise, which is called put your thoughts in a box or put it in a box, is to help you gain control over your thoughts. Right. I was talking to somebody on the phone last night who has a new relationship. She's so excited about it. But the guy is doing stuff that she is interpreting as taking advantage of her, like asking her to go to dinner with 20 minutes notice. And in her mind, it's a sign of disrespect. Right. And I said, well, could it be something else? Like, could you think of his point of view, what it might be? And she said, no, I can't. And so I said, maybe he noticed he had some time and he just wanted to see you, which would, you know, like make a different emotion, right? And so this idea of put it in a box helps you gain some control over your thoughts because she wasn't able to shift to her own thoughts. So I'm going to give you the instructions first and then we'll do it, right? I want you to imagine in your mind that there are three boxes. One is labeled thoughts, one is labeled feelings, and one is labeled sensations or things that you might sense in your body. And we're going to take 2 minutes. I'll tell you when it starts. And just pay attention to what comes into your head. But instead of engaging with it, like thinking, is that true? Or I have to do something tomorrow or something like that. Instead of engaging with the thought and having it hijack you, just put it in its correct box, right? So if you've noticed, oh, what am I having for lunch or something like that? That goes in the thoughts box. If you notice, I feel uncomfortable, that goes in the feelings box. If you notice my leg hurts, that goes in the sensations box. So it's good practice at gaining control over what's happening in our heads. Is everybody ready? All right, I'm going to time 2 minutes. Time starts now. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for doing that exercise. Let me ask a few questions. And if the answer is yes, just raise your hand. How many people weren't thinking of anything for a little bit? Okay, right? How many people notice more sensations than maybe they thought they would? I did. Okay, all right. How many people notice something that they were unaware of just by doing this exercise? I did. That's okay. That was sort of a vague question, right? But this is a good way to put some distance between you and thoughts that might cause you some trouble, all right? And then key into some other things that are going on, like sensations or feelings. So thank you, everybody. Okay, I'm giving you all my favorites at the beginning of these classes. All right. So this is something we haven't done before. Is there anybody who used the skill from last week? And not everybody was here last week. I know that. But if you were here last week, is there anybody who checked the facts and would like to take 1 to 2 minutes to tell us about it? Anybody volunteer? Vicky, beautiful. Tell us how it went.
I'm in a long-distance relationship and my boyfriend is visiting in June. So I'm really nervous about it. And then I was just trying to think, well, if it doesn't work out, we'll break up. You know what I mean? It's not, if it doesn't work, or we'll be friends. It won't be the end of the world if this visit is bad. It might be awkward, but it won't be, you know, the most horrible thing that ever happened. But anyway, so I'm really nervous about the visit and like my apartment and if my apartment is clean enough or good enough. And if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't work out, then I'm free to find someone closer. So
beautiful. That's right. You check the facts on your anxiety, right? And you realize that, okay, even if the thing that I'm sort of afraid of doesn't work out, it'll still be okay. Good for you. All right. Good. Thank you, Vicky. So if anybody, you know, next time, If you use the skill today, let us know how it went, and we'd love to hear it. All right. So today we're going to be focusing on an emotion regulation skill called problem solving to change the way you feel, right? So if you were here last week, we learned about checking the facts. And if your feelings fit the facts of a situation, one of the things that you can do to feel better, right, if the feeling is causing you distress, one of the things that you can have less distress is to problem solve, change the situation that's causing you to feel the way that you're feeling. All right. That kind of makes sense, right? If something's making you unhappy, change it. But that doesn't happen all the time. In fact, a lot of the times it doesn't happen. We don't change the situation to make ourselves feel better. And so why do we do that? I want to talk a little bit about why we do that. The first reason maybe we don't change the situation is because we can kind of get used to anything. It's like that metaphor of the frog boiling in the pot, right? We can get used to anything and sort of not notice this. And I'll give you a real life example. I used to work with a psychologist who told this story. His wife had colitis, right? And it had sort of been getting worse and worse and worse, but it was a gradual situation. And they didn't really do anything about it. She had a doctor, but they didn't tell the doctor. They just figured this is part of the disease. And so finally, it got really bad, and they went to the doctor, and the doctor immediately hospitalized his wife and said, "What are you guys doing? Right? These symptoms are pretty extreme. Why didn't you say anything before it got really, really bad?" And their response was, "I don't know. It just didn't occur to us. We just thought that this was part of it." So we can sort of get used to something that's making us unhappy without thinking that we can actually change it, right? And one of the things we're going to talk about when we talk about radical acceptance in a few weeks is how do you know when you can make something better and when you can't? All right. So sometimes we just don't realize we can make it better. A second reason is that it's sometimes scary to make changes that would make our lives better, and we underestimate we don't have confidence in our ability to deal with it. I'm going to tell you a story from my life that I'm sort of embarrassed about. I'll tell you another one later that I'm embarrassed about too. But here's this one. I met my first husband when I was a teenager, and we married when I was 23. And he was a very nice guy, and I'm pretty sure he still is a very nice guy. But we were kids when we got together, and we sort of grew apart. And the marriage lasted 11 years. After the years where we dated, we stayed together married for 11 years, but we were increasingly unhappy. And I wasn't listening to myself. So here's what I should have been paying attention to. I don't know if anybody is as old as I am, but I was an adult before the internet, and New York Magazine used to have personal ads, and it was actually The New Yorker had personal ads, and I would read those personal ads and think, "Oh, wouldn't that be nice?" It didn't occur to me that that might be a sign I was unhappy in my marriage. Here's the even sillier one. I would sometimes think, it's true. Young people don't really die that much these days, but he could get sick and die. And it didn't occur to me that meant I was unhappy in my marriage and maybe should pay attention to that, right? So thank goodness, 11 years into the marriage, he had the courage to say, "I'm not happy. I think that we should separate." I feel like writing him a thank you note now, right? Thank goodness he had the courage to do that, even though it felt devastating at the time. I was not a person who thought I'd ever be divorced. And I think I lacked confidence in my ability to cope with it. Right? Obviously, I did cope with it. So many years later, but that was a big change that seemed really scary to me and that I was afraid to take on. So that's another reason we don't change the situation if we're not happy or if it's causing us distress. And then finally, sometimes we don't actually know how. We don't have the skills, or we don't know how. Here's another example for me. Is that we live in a very old house, a big old house. It's over 100 years old, right? And when there are big repairs that need to be done, the sort of structural things, we do it. Like the garage needs a new roof, the porch is falling apart. We have to rebuild some of the pillars. But there's other stuff that we don't have the money for. That would make it really, really nice, but I don't know how to do it, right? I don't have, we don't have the money to call somebody in to repair it, and I don't have the skills, and neither does my current husband. He's not a handy guy, right? He's good at science, but he's not so good at home sort of stuff. So I'm not making those changes because I can't afford to, and I don't know how to. Maybe if I finally retire, I'll watch some YouTube videos or something, but I'm not making the changes until then. Okay. All right. So what we're going to talk about today is problem solving to reduce distress, to change the way that you feel. How do we figure this out? So I'm going to share my screen. So here are our materials. And so problem solving. We're going to go through a process to figure out how to make a situation better, to make us feel less distressed. And I'm going to take you through something I did pretty recently using this framework. Again, I'm a little embarrassed about it. I don't think my I'm going to check. I don't think my sponsor is here, but she might be. I never told her about this because it was so silly. All right, she isn't, but it was so silly. This was about maybe 2 months ago. I decided that I'm mad at OA. I'm mad at it and I'm quitting. If you were at my workshop, I told the story already, so I apologize for telling it again. But I was mad at OA. I don't need this. I don't have time for this. And I'm mad at OA. All right. So the first step here is to check the facts on your feelings. I needed to check the facts because, all right, one way to solve this problem is to quit OA, right? Okay, I could do that. Right. But I don't think I had the right problem. And I kind of knew that I didn't have the right problem situation. I knew it, right? Because I started to check the facts right away. Okay. So why am I mad at OA? Right? Is it getting in the way of an important goal or something like that? No. Okay. So what am I mad about? How do I feel about the meetings? I love the meetings. I look forward to the meetings I go to. Okay. So that's not it. I thought about it. I love my sponsees. It is not about that at all. I don't mind that time. Okay. How about my sponsor, right? And then I thought, what is it? Is it about my sponsor? No, I love my sponsor. I respect her. She's helped me so much. She has stuff to say that's incredibly valuable. So it's not that. So what is it? And you know what it is? We talked on the phone. My sponsor and I talk on the phone. I hate talking on the phone. I have ADHD. It's not stimulating enough. I hate making phone calls. I dread it. All right. So I realize that the problem here is that when I, all of this emotion and anger is about the fact that I have to talk on the phone. Okay. So then what should we do about that? I think I've identified my goal in solving the problem is for me to dread my phone, the phone calls with my sponsor less. It had nothing to do with the meetings, OA, my sponsees, nothing to do with that. It's just that I felt really, really like sort of bored and uncomfortable on the phone. Okay, so what could I do? Here are my choices. I could ask my sponsor if we could have video calls instead. I could change the time because we were talking in the evening and maybe I was just too tired. I could get another sponsor. I could go without a sponsor. I'm listing all my options, right? I can maybe get into a co-sponsoring relationship where we could do it that way. So then your next one is to choose a solution that fits the goal here in step five. So what I did is I'm gonna like the thing that I think would have the most benefit for me and the least negative consequences would just be being brave enough to ask my sponsor if we can have a video call. So I did that. Step six, put the solution into action. I did that. I told her it's hard for me to talk on the phone. I actually dread talking on the phone, even though what we talk about is fine. And guess what she said? She said, okay, let's do a video call. And we started doing that. And guess what? I'm not mad anymore. I look forward to our calls. I don't dread them. Right. So I went through the situation. But as I said, I think the hardest step may be checking the facts. Right. Make sure you have the right problem that you're trying to solve. I remember telling my accountability buddy about this and we were laughing because it was so silly. I was so off. So make sure you've got the right problem. Figure out what your goal is, what you want to achieve. I wanted to achieve not dreading a phone call that was helpful to me. Right. work out what the options might be, figure out which one is the likely to be the most beneficial and maybe the least with the least cost to you or negative consequences. Try it out. And sometimes it'll solve the problem right away, like this one did, but sometimes it won't. And so that's okay. You're going to go back and try one of the other things that you thought of. All right. So this is a very interesting chart. And I have taken out the content in the second column because we're going to deal with that next week, right? That's going to be opposite action. But here are just some situations and some helpful guidelines that you can use. So let's pick one of my favorite emotions to talk about is envy, because some of us have been raised thinking that envy is a sin of some kind, that you shouldn't covet what other people want. In my mind, envy is a sign that you want something that somebody else has. Okay, right. So here's if this situation, you're feeling envious, and this is the situation, another person or group gets or has things you don't have that you want or need, right? Here are some things that you can do. Number one, improve yourself in your life. Go for it. Figure out what you want and figure out how to get it. It's a way that you can problem solve, right? If something's not fair, work on making it fair. If somebody has something that you really want, but maybe you can't, you can devalue it, which means you can ask yourself, is it really important? Do I need that car? Right? Can I make my life happy without it? Right? So that we can devalue the thing that we're feeling envious about. We can put on rose-colored glasses, which means see the positive of what you already have. Right? Or avoid people who have more than you do. Like, you don't have to be on social media feeling envious of things. You can remove yourself from that. All right. Let's take another example. Well, some does somebody mind? If there's an emotion here, tell me what you're interested in. You have fear, anger, disgust, envy, jealousy, love, and sadness, shame, and guilt. Somebody unmute quickly and tell me what emotion you'd like for us to take a look at.
Anxiety.
Let's look at anxiety. Thank you. Okay. So here are things that justify your anxiety. Your life is in danger. Your health is in danger. Your well-being is in danger. So if one of those things are true, it makes sense to feel anxiety. If those things aren't true, we talked about this last week, maybe it doesn't make sense to feel anxiety. And Vicky gave a really good example of that, right? Her life isn't in danger, her health isn't in danger, and her well-being isn't in danger if it doesn't work out with her long-distance boyfriend. But if these things are true, right? If there is real reason to be afraid, okay, here are the things that you can do. You can get away, so you have to figure out how, right? That's problem solving, right? Keep yourself safe. How do you keep yourself safe? Right? Or how do you remove the threatening event? Again, problem solving. How do we get rid of it? Right? Do what gives you a sense of control and mastery of the fearful event. So while you might have a lot of control over what happens, what makes you feel in control? What makes you feel like you have some mastery? Let me think, see if I can think of an example. Like, let's say you get a scary diagnosis from the doctor, right? Because health problems can be really scary. And if your life and health are in danger, it makes sense to feel anxious, right? But then what you might do is do some research on what's wrong with you so that you have knowledge. Ask your doctor questions to give you more knowledge. Talk to other people who have experienced the same thing. Enroll in a clinical trial or something like that. How do you take some control over the thing that scares you? And if you can, avoid the threatening event. So, for example, I'm in New York City and there's a lot of protesting going on. And one of my clients is a student at Columbia University. And then there's a lot of protesting going on. And what's happening on campus isn't so bad, but he said that that's what's happening right outside campus where there aren't students who are protesting. So he does not have to go there, right? Classes are remote now. He doesn't have to go on campus right now. He lives off campus. He doesn't have to go to the campus. So that's a way of avoiding a threatening event. All right. Anybody want to give me one more emotion to look at before we practice?
Guilt.
Guilt? Love guilt. Good. Let's talk briefly about the difference between shame and guilt. Okay. Guilt is when you are feeling badly about something you've done because you violated your own values. Shame is when you are scared that you're going to be rejected by that you're that people are going to reject you for it. So it's more sort of an outwardly outward there. Okay. So your own behavior violates your own values or moral code. If that's the case, then you would feel guilty. Sometimes you feel guilty and there's no good reason, and we'll talk about that next week, right? But sometimes we have done something that makes us feel guilty. And so you can problem solve around one, seeking forgiveness, right? How do you make amends of some kind? Okay. You can problem solve around repairing the harm, making things better. You can problem solve around accepting the consequences gracefully, right? I did last week. It wasn't the worst thing in the world, and I was checking the facts on it, but I did almost give away a surprise party for my cousin, right? Almost. Thank goodness I didn't, but I felt so guilty. And I was getting teased about it on the day of the party. And I was feeling mad. But then I realized, no, I did that, right? I did it. And so I have to accept the consequences gracefully. And I did. I tried to laugh with it, although internally I was sort of mad that people were teasing me about it because I felt so bad already. Or we can problem solve to commit to avoiding behaviors that violate your moral values in the future. Okay, lesson learned, right? How do I not do this next time? So there's our example. All right. Here are ways that, give you sort of directions for problem solving. And then we're not going to look at this today, but just for your own use, here's a little worksheet for problem solving to change emotions. So I would like to actually put people into breakout groups. I think we have enough time. And it'd be great if each one of you could choose something that's causing you distress. And if there's something you can do about the situation, problem solve with people in your breakout room. That sound okay? Yeah, look at emotion regulation handout 12, problem solving. That gives you the steps. Okay, good. All right, welcome back, everybody. Thank you for doing this exercise. And I'd love for we have a few more minutes left. I'd love for a few people to share. And if possible, maybe somebody who hasn't shared before. It'd be great to hear from somebody new. I just want to hear how that went.
I will share.
Thank you, Carla.
I feel so bad because I lost my partner in the chat just as she was about to share. But yeah, I really think that I hopefully got a little more clarity. I was feeling some anger about a situation with my sponsor. And so I think I got a little clarity about having a more precise conversation. So that I didn't interrupt our progress. I
That's great. Where was the most work done? Was it in figuring out what the problem was, in choosing possible solutions?
think it was in choosing solutions because I
Okay.
pretty much knew what the problem was. Although I couldn't see the whole paper. I was afraid to click on the situation that I might lose it, but I wasn't sure if there was just anger or if there was something that would fit more like dismissive kind of situations. In turn, we went with anger. So,
All right. Great. I'm so glad. Good.
thank you.
Anybody else want to tell us about it? Thanks, Christine.
Yeah. So, in my situation, I'm dealing with shame, and it was great. Just walking through the problem-solving sheet was really wonderful, and my fellows in the room with me were great at letting me just kind of figure it out on my own by just talking through it. And it
Good.
was really the feedback too. So I think that when I was brainstorming solutions, it was difficult for me to not be critical and not weed them out too soon, you know?
Right.
I did like the fact that I could choose two solutions when I was unsure, because I'm like, well, if I just balance between the two, which one is going to be better? I can actually try one for a while and then try another. So that was really useful for me. And it was very nice to have the feedback as well.
I'm so glad. Good. Thank you for the people who shared. That's wonderful.
Thanks for joining us today. If you'd like to support our efforts, please visit secularovereaters.org and consider making a small donation.